Good morning. Welcome to the July 10th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do have hearing devices available from our board clerk. Anyone interested or in need of those, please see the clerk. Madam Clerk, would you read changes to the agenda, please?
Certainly. Amended items. Addendum to item number 10. The subject of the transmittal shows an incorrect amount of 180,00. The correct amount is 180,000 as listed on the agenda and in the current year financial impact. Addendum to item number 15, staff is recommending that the staff report, transmittal, and clerk's file statement be replaced to correct the contractual terms of the agreement, which is 5 years rather than 2 years as initially stated. Addendum to item number 16, staff is recommending that the staff report and transmittal be replaced to correct the contractual terms of the agreement, which is 4 years rather than 3 years as initially stated. Addendum to item number 17, staff is recommending changing the subject to read introduction of a proposed ordinance amending Title 19 of the San Luis Obispo County Code by adopting the 2010 edition of the California Building Standards Code, including annual supplement, state and local amendments, and instruct the clerk to give notice a hearing date set for July 24th, 2012 at 9 a.m. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Sometime next month with an award.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howell. Al Barrow, followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning. Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. Area C and D is what you're talking about here, the collection zone for Los Osos, and came in at $32 million. Part of the bidding process includes asphalt paving for $6 million is estimate for that. We've got 50 miles of road replacement here. If you use 3-inch AC on our roads, which would be appropriate, be looking at $10 million. The engineer's estimates on almost all items are underestimated. I don't understand why that consistency is taking place. We had the same thing back in 2003 with Montgomery Watson, estimated $86 million turned out to be $134 million or $46 million, 46% over bid. So the concern that I have is that the bidding process and the reality of the cost are not really matching up the way we'd like to. And most of the bidders are way over the low bid, indicating that most of the estimators think that this project is more expensive than the county says it is. I challenge the county to build this project for what they say they can. Still, the overall estimate of cost, including all the collection and so forth, is $173 million, not including the $19 million assessment that we're already paying every month. So when Mr. Gibson says the project is $150 a month, he doesn't include that, and he doesn't include the on-lot cost. So those are some discrepancies in reality. I mean, reality, folks, is when you get the bill and you have to pay it. So spinning the cost of a project with this impact in such a small community is really unfair. And almost a little bit less than 50% of the payees are renters. So they're going to look at their rents going up, and those are the lowest income section probably in the county. So I have a big concern about the affordability issue still, but the cost of building this project are not going down, they're going to go up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Julie Tacker, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker. And first, I have to say I was taken aback by the placement of this item on your agenda. On the consent calendar, gentlemen, there should be questions. You should have a lot of questions relative to $32 million being approved today. Some of what Mr. Barrow said, it's not in your staff report, the bid breakdown. You have to do your own due diligence and go over to the design division's portion of the website for public works to see the bids. And we spent $5 million hiring Camp Dresser and McKee to redesign what Montgomery Watson Harza had designed in the early 2000s. And their estimates are coming in very low. This particular B and C, this is the collection system for areas B and C, they estimated $22 million. The lowest bid is at $29 million. You're going to add a contingency, taking it over $32 million today. There's something wrong. Within the schedule, the Broderson leach field, an 8-acre facility, your engineer has estimated at $444,000. That makes absolutely no sense, and the bidder that you're awarding this to today recognized that, and his bid for just that portion is $1.6 million. I am surprised that your Public Works Department isn't giving you a presentation to show the breakdown and why these bids keep coming in over engineer's estimate. That's what we paid Camp Dresser and McKee to do, is give us a solid estimate. A question I have for the future is, where is our value engineering process? I would think that the loan providers would be requiring a value engineering process that would hopefully reduce the price of the project.
ARB, their bid on this second section, 62% over. And the top bid, 75% over engineer's estimate. We paid $5 million for this type of work. Mr. Meacham, you said if the bids came in over engineer's estimates, you were going to question the process. Why is this on consent calendar? It's on consent calendar because we have to speak first. If it's an agenda item, we get a staff presentation, and then we get to come and make our public comments. But when we sit down, staff's going to get up, or Bruce is going to call him up, or Bruce already has a prepared statement to tell you that we're still saving $20 million on the collection system. You have the entire collection system, with the exception of the pump stations, out, have received bids and are ready to go. One was at engineer's estimate, one's $7 million over. Tell me how we're saving $20 million. The way we're saving $20 million is because staff put in the budget, the numbers from the old project inflated to this time period. Does anybody believe that the collection system was going to be $104 million? $104 million. And why is this bid so much out of line with the first set of bids? So you're going to hear the spin from Mr. Gibson how we're saving $20 million. Must be that new modern math. But it still comes down to the first bid, based on engineer's estimate, was right on. Second one, $7 million, 31% over engineer's estimate. You've allowed staff, and you bought into it, to corrupt this process. We're at $60 million now for the collection system, and we don't have the pump stations. Compare that to the bids for the first project. I think you'll find out some very interesting information. But it's coming. You're going to hear how we've saved $20 million. And this budget doesn't match up to the budget that was presented for the last hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Lindy Owen.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from Los Osos, where the nitrates are low and saltwater intrusion is destroying our basin. And we'll continue with this project. Where's the oversight? How does this... This is kind of an oddball scenario where the county is building a sewer and the county is approving a sewer. Again, these funds are really questionable. We're looking at, it goes up to $39.3 million for the highest bid on this project. That means that somebody felt that this was, $17 million more to do the project than the engineer's estimate. This is leftovers from Montgomery Watson Harza, who, if you anybody could recall, when it came forward for approval at the last time when it was a Midtown site, the estimates were, the lowest estimates were 50% over the engineer's estimate. Nobody went back to question how come they put such a low bid out or low estimate out and sold it to the people, then turned around and came in with these 50% over bids. This is going the same direction. In this case, this bid for BNC is way over what was estimated, whereas the A and D supposedly are a bit lower. I'll tell you what's going to happen. All the overrun costs are slated to be added onto our rates and charges, so there really is no concern, and the county is running basically their own, pat themselves on the back for issuing whatever contracts they issue. There is no value engineering. Who do we take this to? I mean, we've been to the feds where it is being investigated, I hope, on a federal level, because you're using federal and state money to finance this dang thing. And you didn't get the best value. And there are alternatives, and they were always there. And Mr. Pava Ogren chose to get the most expensive project because it solves a couple problems, I'm thinking. One is... basically, he can empty our basin of water. This project is, this dewatering plan is slated to take out 7 million gallons a day and probably dump it in the bay because there's such bad planning. And it also gives the build-out money to the county. When we have enough water in Los Osos, the county will then be building new houses. They could go up to their 28,000 people if they wanted to. So... please, would somebody get some questions going on this? This should not be running over cost, and basically it has been running amok from the beginning of not looking at alternative systems that were about a third the price. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. That concludes my request to speak on the consent.
I'd like just a it actually was a quick comment on item 4 and a quick question on item 11. Okay. Let me take 4 first, which is an allocation of community project funds to the Cambria Library Project. I just wanted to point out that the Cambria Friends and of the Library have done a remarkable job over the last 2.5-plus years in coming up with their share, which will amount to $1.4 million to get the new library put into Cambria. They are in the final stages of it. They are basically down to the last 10% of that, having hit an important milestone of 80% of the goal. We're working with admin, the library, and general services to get ready on some plans and bid packages. Through the remarkable generosity of the Hind Foundation, Mr. Greg Hind has come up with a matching challenge grant of $140,000. The Friends, in one fundraising event a couple weekends ago, raised $16,000. So we're well on our way there, and I want to thank Mr. Hind and his foundation, the Friends, everybody who's worked so hard on this project. On item 11 is the question of purchasing a chiller, and my question is fairly minor. This is part of the air conditioning system of the health agency campus, and we noticed that purchase of the existing facility, the existing equipment, was going to provide us something like a 10 to 15 year lifespan for a certain amount of money. For about twice of that, we could purchase new have perhaps twice the lifespan. And my only question there was, in terms of purchasing the existing equipment versus the new equipment, do we get any benefit of warranty if we purchase new equipment? I wonder if we could get a brief description of that.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. I'm Katie Perez with General Services. Yes, we get we get two items with the purchase of this chiller. We get a thorough inspection of it, some diagnostic testing to ensure that it is indeed functioning as we expect it to function. And then we have an ongoing working relationship with the vendor so that should we have any issues, we can go back to them.
On their dime?
Yes.
Very good. Okay, thank you. That's what I need.
Thank you. And then we had some interest in exploring item 20 a little bit. Staff, if you could clue us in, Mr. Waddell.
Yes, good morning, Chairman, members of the board. I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. And the bottom line, as several speakers mentioned, is that the bids did come in about $20 million, or are coming in about $20 million under budget. And we've also opened the pump station bids. Then the low bid was about $8,600,000. And so with contingencies, both areas and the pump stations, including contingencies, are $70 million for the collection system, and that is significantly less than the $104 million that was budgeted. So that is the bottom line, that we are significantly under budget. And, you know, during the bidding process and the variability between bidders and from the engineer's estimate, you know, that is, not really relevant. The bids always vary widely. We established the budget, and we've established the funding approvals and the financing, and we are well under budget, and, the bids have come in low.
Okay. Any other specific questions?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, Mr. Meacham?
John, I think it's somewhat disingenuous to suggest that we are $20 million in savings when we actually see this one coming in way over budget. So I guess I'm not overly optimistic when we know we have others that are coming in, and we haven't even got to the treatment portion of this yet. So I guess when you say that we're $20 million, we're saving this from the allocated, from the budget, I still don't understand how you justify that when we're 31% over on this one.
We are under budget. There's the budget. We established the budget. We established our preliminary engineering estimates back in 2007. You know, as we've gone forward, including in 2011.
Mr. Waddell. Yes. Those of you in the audience, please, no outbursts. Thank you.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, John, could you explain where our cost estimates? I mean, we've been dealing with cost estimates since we started this project in 2007. Right. Where did we come up with those cost estimates? And those are the cost estimates that we've been using to calculate the estimated monthly cost. Maybe you could start at the beginning there.
We did, in 2007, as one of the first steps of the projects, did an engineering evaluation of alternatives, both, and on the collection system it was STEP, collection and gravity, developed the budget we're working with. Those are just estimates at the time we go out to bid.
Can you kind of point to something? Can we attribute to this particular bid being so much higher than the engineer's estimate? What is it that's driving that cost up?
I think there's, again, I don't know if something is driving the cost up. I mean, the way that the engineer CDM did it is, they had their designers. They have a separate construction wing of their company, and they had those guys developed the estimates as if they were bidding on the project, but those were not the individuals that were involved in the design. So if they were and they're doing those kind of separate, so they're looking at it as if they're bidding, but they were not bidding on it. So did they underestimate some? Yes, most likely. Then did the bidders during the bidding climate just based on other factors? I know on this one, some of the feedback we got was that this area, unlike A and D, this area B and C includes Cuesta by the Sea with some of the narrower streets. It has more groundwater. And so that could have been some of the factors of just the more restricted right-of-way, more dewatering. So you know, a number of factors that are hard to gauge. And also, you know, on individual bid items, bidders vary. You know, one bidder is going to be higher than the estimate on one bid item and higher, significantly higher than others, because they put more cost into that, but maybe they didn't put as much cost into another item. So, you know, just again, comparing bid items between bidders does not necessarily provide insight into how they're bidding. I mean, they can't have a weighted bid. We're putting extra money in an item, but you know, they're all going to have their opinion on what item, what each item costs, and how to allocate those.
Well, here's what really concerns me is that with this engineering estimate and the bid that has come in exceeding this considerably, and as you just mentioned, you can't put in, you can't load it up one way, you know, in certain segments. My concern is where are the cost overruns going to come from? Because if this is a 31% over where we're seeing things now, I'm really concerned that we're going to see some cost overruns and some requests for additional funds at some point. So I want to know how tight this is going to be.
Let me ask. The bid prices.
Yeah, I was going to say the bid prices. And, Mr. Meacham, I have to ask why you believe there are going to be cost overruns on this. You may recall a couple things about the Nacimiento pipeline. First of all, first bid package that was opened, as I recall, staff can correct me, was over engineer's estimate by some amount. I don't remember
not
how much. Second is that $195 million project,
$176,
comparable project to this, brought in under budget.
Yes.
And so why are you concerned that there are going to be cost overruns in this project?
Because none of those bids that came in on the Nacimiento project were this excessive in the engineer's estimate.
All right. But so I'm questioning
where and why is there such a disproportionate number here?
Given what we had estimated in our budget that we have set up and financed, I don't quite see what the concern is when we're coming in 20% under what we've budgeted. Where's the problem there? I don't see the problem.
Well, I guess I can't figure out the math the way you're
well,
making this.
Well, we budgeted.
I know what you budgeted. I know what's been budgeted for this project. And I said then, and I'll say it again, if this thing exceeds that, I'm not going to support it.
Okay.
I think that we're seeing right now 31% over on this one particular bid, just this one.
And we've got a $20 million of headway before we even come close to the budgeted amount. I don't see a problem here.
Well, I hope we don't.
Okay, good. I do too.
Okay, any other questions? And as staff pointed out, there's at least, four different bid packages for this project, broken into four or five different...
Yeah, just to recap, there's the Area A and D, which has already been awarded, Areas B and C, which is today.
And that came in under budget, did it not?
It came in slightly under the engineer's estimate, well under budget, yes,
yeah.
And under the engineer's estimate. Areas B and C, which is today, the pump stations, which have been opened, and we'll be bringing that to your board, and those that also came in over the engineer's estimate, but well within our budget. So then all of those together, that constitutes the collection system. And then we still have the treatment facility, which we'll be doing design build and going out for that design build process about the end of this year.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Waddell. Mr. Meacham, you had a question or comment on item 27?
Okay, yeah. I just wanted Mr. Collins, if you would, just briefly speak to this issue, because it, based on the staff report, it appears as though we're just pulling out altogether of Paso Robles in terms of this one stop. And as we discussed yesterday, you explained to me that that's not entirely the case. So I wish you could just, you know, kind of broach.
In my view, not a bad thing. But what it did mean that for Shoreline, the infrastructure that was required to maintain three separate one stops could not be accommodated, since a certain amount of their funding had to be diverted to meet that 25% training threshold. So they have withdrawn their space rent, some of their staffing from Australia, but it doesn't mean that that center is closing. We will continue to provide services there through the Department of Social Services, through the Cuesta Workforce Development, and then we will on a regular basis provide Workforce Investment Act services in North County, both in Paso Robles through the library and in Atascadero through a kiosk center. There's also an online job assistance center that we are trying to market and make folks aware of, where they can access WIA services really from anywhere, from their home computer or from any library if they have that. So it's unfortunate in one way that we are kind of following the lead from EDD that had to reduce its services. And the reason that Paso Robles would be, of the three centers, the least impacted is that it was the center with the lowest census. We had the fewest numbers coming through that center than we do in our sites, both in San Luis Obispo and in the Five Cities area. So we have not reduced our commitment to providing these services in the North County. It's just that we have had to reconfigure them to meet the requirements of the legislation.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you.
Good explanation. Madam Clerk, there was another item before we take action on consent that you wanted to address.
Yes.
Turn your speaker down. Turn your speaker down with the knob under the yoke.
Oh.
Try that.
There we go. I just wanted to amend item number one to add the bid opening date of Thursday, August 9th, 2012 to the subject that was inadvertently left out.
Okay, very good. And I am closing public comment on the consent agenda, and with that...
I'll move approval of consent as amended.
Okay. Second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda as amended. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, with the exception of 20. I'm going to say no.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you. And we'll move on to our presentation item, but we'll wait for the chambers to clear here before we embark on that effort. This morning on the presentation, we have a resolution proclaiming July 2012 as Parks Make Life Better Month. And we have Curtis Black, our Parks Director, and Rick Matthews, a member of the Parks and Recreation Commission here, and it gives me pleasure to read this resolution that states, whereas parks and recreation make lives and communities better now and in the future, and parks contribute to the overall high quality of life and make our communities more livable by providing open space, recreation, and gathering places, and the residents of San Luis Obispo County, including children, youth, families, adults, seniors, businesses, community organization, and visitors benefit from the wide range of parks, lakes, golf courses, trails, open space, sports fields, and courts for fishing, boating, camping, team sports, playing, picnicking, and relaxing provided by San Luis Obispo County Parks. And whereas the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors urges all its residents to recognize that parks and recreation enriches the lives of its residents and visitors while adding value to the community's homes and neighborhoods. And whereas July is Parks and Recreation Month nationally, now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim July 2012 as Parks Make Life Better Month, and in doing so, urges all citizens to use and enjoy its parks, trails, open space, facilities, and recreation opportunities. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And here's the resolution.
Is there indeed a special place, and it's made better by our county parks. We have over 14,000 acres of park lands that include campgrounds, as you mentioned, lakes, neighborhood and community parks, golf courses, beaches, swimming pools, and trails. And personally, I'm eager to get in some practice at the disc golf course
at Heilman Park sometime this week. But the ways that parks make San Luis Obispo County such a special place was never more apparent than at our Parks Commission meeting of June 28, where a local nonprofit from the 4th District called Jack's Helping Hand was requesting funding from Parks' public facility fee account to help in the development and construction of Jack Ready Park. The plan calls for a universally accessible park where all children, regardless of physical limitations, will be able to play side by side. This park will be unique in the region and will be an inspiration for residents and visitors alike. It's expensive, it's ambitious, and it'll have to come together in phases. But the commission believes that it is indeed very worthy of county support, and the efforts of Jack's Helping Hand are truly inspirational. And just as we're happy to support Jack Ready Park, we also saw the list of other parks' priority projects that still await sources of funding and support, and it's a long list. So I know that you all know that, and that you've been great supporters of parks, and I urge you to continue and expand county and community support of parks as you navigate the county's affairs. It's good to note some of the ways, though, that parks make life better and remind the public of the treasures that are here for all to enjoy and benefit from, like enhancing tourism and the local economy, providing positive alternatives for youth and adults, thereby reducing crime, increasing intergenerational activities and social connections, promoting the arts, and increasing our health, adding value to community properties and neighborhoods, and increasing community pride. In these and many more ways, parks make life better. And using Jack's Helping Hand as a model of community coming together, let's help make parks better and this month and going forward. So the Parks and Recreation Commission and County Parks appreciate your board's support for parks and recognizing July 2012 as Parks Make Life Better Month. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Board. Curtis Black, Deputy Director. Just want to say thank you for your support. And we know that parks make life better here in San Luis Obispo County. We see it with the people. We have community groups throughout the county raising funds to get the children and many adults out swimming for free throughout the county. We see it with volunteers that head out and prepare our trails, get them ready for people to hike. We see it with the volunteers that show kids how to fish up at the lakes. Throughout our county, the people are helping county parks provide the programs. You, through your various actions here, are helping support our parks on a continuing basis. And we thank you for this resolution and for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Black.
Mr. Patterson, may I get a motion to approve the presentation,
we need
Your Honor?
I'd like to retroactively move that we approve the consent, the presentation calendar.
And let's approve both presentations, even though we'll be making one this afternoon, so that'll include both this and the resolution and the upcoming one for
Ms. Madonna. I'll second that twice.
Okay, very good. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, and thank you for that reminder, Madam Clerk. With that, we'll go to general public comment for items not on today's agenda, and our first request to speak is Ms. Rodewald, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning, Board. Welcome back.
The mic's not on. At the base of the mic, Julie, there's this.
Good morning. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I'm here to just give you a brief overview of some of the changes that we've made to the website since we implemented it, I think, in March. My staff and the staff from the administrative office has worked a lot with the vendors, and so we just wanted to kind of highlight some of the changes. So I've got the website up. If we can show that. So one of the changes, this is the Granicus page that people are used to going into. And if you'll see up here, you can go directly to the agenda for a meeting or to the item documents. And as we get our minutes posted, if you look down further at some of our older meetings, you've got the ability to go to the item documents or directly to the minutes. So it'll make it easier for the public to navigate directly to those documents. The other change here is that now you can cleaning up some of the navigation. It makes it clear how you can access things. But we would continue to encourage public that has any questions or concerns to contact our office. We've got contact information on the website, or they can call us at 781-5080, and we can help help them navigate. One of the things that when I've talked with the public, that you can't in our new system, you cannot go directly from the agenda to the staff reports like you can with the older documents through Granicus. That functionality is just not there. So I want to reiterate that that's not something that could be fixed, because this new website has other better functionality with the advanced search. So it didn't fix everything that we've heard from the public, but I think that we did make it easier for them to navigate and to get to the items, the information that they want to see on the website. So available for any questions, or yeah. Like I say, people can call.
Well, I want to thank you for making those changes and making it easier to navigate. I know there were a lot of concerns when the new system came online, and this obviously is very simple, very straightforward, and hopefully we won't have any problems.
Right. Well, like I say, it was a team effort with a lot of people involved in it.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Rodewald? None? Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome.
Gwen Taylor, followed by Ben DeFatta.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. I think we're all seeing what the lack of rain is doing to our county. It is not good. 4 years have passed since the ISJ was signed by the participating parties to the basin adjudication. The question is, where is the basin water plan? Where is the conservation plan? Where is the retrofit plan and implementation of this conservation plan? Why is the county permitting the increased development of community gardens which use water on sites that have not used water in years? Why is Public Works using potable water as well as construction companies using from fire hydrants in the prohibition zone for construction? As of March 2011, it was confirmed that seawater intrusion into the water basin has accelerated. What has been done in the 16 months to address this major problem? Has the county established a baseline for the basin water conditions before the installation of the sewer lines and the dewatering program about to take place? To continue putting off actions to protect the water basin of Los Osos is irresponsible. It has been established that recycled water is not the answer, and Public Works is more interested in assuring those in the assessment district that the roads will be repaired than they are in the recharge of our groundwater basin. It is sad that this seems to be taking place, let alone the whole community knowing that we do not have access to additional water. We have a basin, that is it, and they have not been totally informed that we are running out of water. We have no other water for access. We need water to survive, and we see what's happening to the lack of water around us now. What is going to happen to the public when they do not have potable water to use? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ben DeFatta, followed by Al Barrow.
Morning, Board, Sheriff, Public. I am Ben DeFatta from Gibson's and Ogren's future bankrupt town of Los Osos. Chairman Patterson, your board and previous other boards have not passed the test of protecting the citizens of Los Osos from the loss of their property, savings, liberty, and prosperity in the pursuit of happiness, as the Constitution says. The Constitution of the United States was formed to protect and serve, not to tax its citizens so much as to throw them out of their homes and on the streets. This Constitution was made to limit government power, not to take away our freedoms by bankrupting its citizens. Now that Obamacare is declared legal, Obamacare will be the biggest tax increase in U.S. history, except one. On a November ballot, Sacramento will be asking the people in the state to vote to tax themselves a dozen billions of dollars more in taxes to balance its shortfall budget because of its refusal to curb the state spending spree. Mr. Gibson, and for the most part of this board, is doing the same thing in not finding a way to curb the cost of Gibson and Ogden's excessive gravity sewer spending spree. Your $200 million antiquated gravity collection project against the people of Los Osos is criminal, and you know that, especially when an alternative could be built for $50 to $100 million cheaper. It's a no-brainer. The alternatives are better and much cheaper than his flawed gravity project. Instead, we were all deceived into believing that Gibson and Ogden were going to look at all systems. Instead, these two only looked at the most expensive, overpriced, unaffordable, energy hog, stinking, big pipe, deep trench gravity projection project only. On top of that, there was not a peep out of any of you except one, Gibson and Ogden's dictatorial choice of the gravity project only.
Thank now, you, Mr. DeFatta. Thank you, your time.
I've got two more pages, sir.
Al Barrow, followed by Mike Brown.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow. I have an announcement to make. Acorn founder Wade Rathke will have a talk. It's live and free. It'll be at the Los Osos Community Park on the lawn by the tennis courts, and it will be Saturday the 14th, this Saturday, at 4 p.m. So bring your family, your friends, your favorite cocktails, drinks, whatever, refreshments, food, picnic, whatever you want to do. And we will have Mark Weber, who will be playing classical guitar music for us. And Mr. Rathke will be explaining how to organize a community for the benefit of the low and moderate income households. So, and repeat, it's on the lawn by the tennis courts. The Coalition for Low-Income Housing is sponsoring this. They will present ACORN, and Wade is the founder of that organization that has 500,000 members, paying members. He's 39 years in this field. He's the chief organizer, and he'll talk, and he's a good listener. And he'll help you with strategies to gain household wealth. So thank you for showing that. And I'd like to say that Wade has a long experience. He started in 1970 founding ACORN with his 500,000 dues-paying families spread throughout 100 cities. And he will be talking about housing development, ownership, and Living Wage Resource Center, things of this nature, how to address issues including creating household wealth, fair lending, living wages, education reform, environmental justice, and other issues. So I think this is a learning experience for a lot of people and an opportunity to ask questions and find out answers. We have an environment now where we have low employment, high unemployment, we have reduced home wealth, we have many households that have been disassembled, and we have a large homeless population. So this would be a way of helping address people, develop strategies to create wealth for their households and to avoid the pain of poverty. So please come on down this Saturday, 4 o'clock, by the tennis courts on the lawn. And I think you'll enjoy him. He's a very charming gentleman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Mike Brown, followed by Dr. C. Height.
Mike Brown representing CoLab. Next week scheduled on your board agenda is the presentation of the report by Econ Northwest entitled The Evaluation of the Economic Effects of Potential Policies to Reduce Residential Growth in Rural Areas of San Luis Obispo County. As we said, we thought this was a good idea to study some of the aspects of this. It's significant, I think, that the title says the effects of potential policies when you've already adopted a number of policies and put them in place which are growth restricting inherently. So, you know, a few examples, the conservation and open space element, which is a very broad and powerful and deep piece of policy work. The report from a consultant, and then a few people speaking to you for 3 minutes. Maybe it would be possible to have a board workshop with give and take. I mean, it would have to be a notice meeting and have some structure, obviously, but a way to really interact, because there are a lot of people, and this is a really important, powerful, potent document which could be used for years. So there was one focus group in putting it together. There was one workshop with the consultant and the staff. But it would be great to be able to engage with the board and everybody on a give-and-take basis about the issues.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Dr. C. Hyde, followed by Gary Freiberg.
Dr. C. Hyde, I am dirt. Perhaps if I come right out and say I am dirt, the powers that be won't feel the necessity of putting me in my place. The bottom 33% of the 99%, the senior disabled fixed income population, Los Osos. When I say I'm from Los Osos, I am dirt, associated with poverty, the diverse class of people, and the last affordable housing in San Luis Obispo County. When I say I'm in the prohibition zone, I am dirt, one of those suckers who will be paying the infrastructure for empty lots in the whole town. The specter of homelessness hangs over the residents of Los Osos, prohibition zone. Homelessness is such a stigma in this county that it taints our current social standing. I will remind you that you almost lost your HUD grant for ignoring the consequences and devastation of homelessness. But I am dirt. You continue to portray the advocates of Los Osos, the fair housing and equal opportunity advocates of Los Osos, as unpleasant people with nasty things to say, as if our basic rights can be canceled out by your false portrayal of our worth, our likability. I am dirt, and you proved that when you invited 5,000 households to a room occupancy of 646. It was like being in a third world country. Only you didn't invite me and my environmentally challenged neighbors. You couldn't accommodate two members of only 1,000 households in a community known to be senior disabled. I am dirt. And if I repent my sin of poverty to the almighty dollar, if I repent and become humble, accept my oppression, perhaps I will be saved. You have already telegraphed your position, telegraphed your stance on any residents of a poor community who is curious about their fate, who questions their fate. That position is, then I am dirt. By association, I have the same low worth that you project on the community of Los Osos as a whole. I am dirt, and now I'm going to prove it.
Thank you, Dr. Hyde. Gary Freiberg, followed by Jeff Edwards.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. Good morning, KCBX listeners and Channel 20 viewers. My name is Gary Freiberg. There has never been an economic impact report of the Los Osos sewer, even though at $170 million, $190 million, it's the most expensive per capita sewer in the United States. And I'm concerned about families, individuals, and retirees in Los Osos and the future economic stability of our county from the loss of $15 million in economic stimulus by Los Osos residents paying their sewer bill. Mr. Gibson, you wrote something that I have a copy of. You said, "I do understand that the cost of the wastewater project will be a significant burden on folks in Los Osos, especially those on fixed income." You know the economics will be a significant burden, and it's going to hurt fixed income retirees? And what have you done in the last 6 years
Mr.
to help
Freiberg,
those people? Nothing. Okay, I'll talk to you, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you.
Ironically, Los Osos is benefiting, and now Mr. Gibson wants to spin it and take credit for the resistance that the group from Los Osos put up. If it wasn't for the group from Los Osos that delayed this sewer for 7 years, Los Osos residents would be paying $50 a month more. But because of the resistance, you benefited from the fact that interest rates went down. It wasn't any battle that you fought. It wasn't anything that you properties. I discovered you're a wealthy Cayucas rancher, and you get in your private airplane to fly down to meetings that others get up at 4 o'clock in the meeting to try to attend. You're out of touch. You don't understand the average Los Osos resident, and you don't represent thousands of us.
Thank you, Mr. Freiberg. Jeff Edwards, followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning, Mr. Patterson, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 35-year county resident. This morning, I wish to bring to your attention a situation involving the Oceano Community Services District. Now, I know normally the county has little to do with the governance of CSDs. However, the current situation may be an exception. Now, it doesn't have anything to do with other issues you may be aware of, that is, no 2012-13 budget yet adopted, not the repeated Brown Act violations, or the incomplete or undone audits for multiple years. It doesn't have anything to do with the deficit spending or the labor law violations. It involves the use of OCSD computers to view illicit material on district time. The allegations involve the district's utility supervisor that was reported in a June 29th Tribune story entitled "Oceano Man Says He Was Forced to Watch Porn While Working for Services District." Actually, the story highlighted what really is already somewhat of common knowledge in Oceano. Now, the utility supervisor is one of a three-person management team, including the accounting manager and, of course, the current district general manager, Tom Gieslin. Being part of Gieslin's management team meant you were in the inner circle of the district's operating. An important question becomes, when did Gieslin know about an employee or employees' use of office equipment on office time to surf the web for internet porn? The basis of the Trib article and other news reports on this item was a June 6, 2012 letter to Mr. Gieslin in connection with the wrongful termination of another employee, which laid out the nature of this office culture or practice. So Gieslin rushes to hire a private investigator to look into the practice of viewing porn on office time and presumably the full implications as it relates to what will be at least one case involving litigation. But the question remains, who's investigating Gieslin? He's been at the helm for over a year as a general manager and must have known about this situation. I urge your board, under the leadership of District 4 Supervisor Teixeira, to get involved early on this matter, to get in front of the problem. The public trust is eroding rapidly in Oceano, and I would urge your board to support the constituents and further this investigation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Julie Tacker, followed by Bob Blair.
Good morning again, Julie Tacker. I'll take a deep breath and change subjects entirely. I wanted to talk about the Tri-W site. Just touching on a little bit of what we talked about earlier, the Tri-W site was going to be the home of a $46 million wastewater treatment facility. That price of that treatment facility did not get carried forward into your budget. There's $20 million on the table. That bid is going to come at a later date, after pipes are already in the ground or underway. And that contractor can hold us hostage. You must have a treatment facility, or you have pipes to nowhere. Back to the Tri-W site. Your contractors have what appears to have completed the restoration of the topography of the site. It doesn't mirror what it was before the mass grading of 2005. It now has been graded to be the home of what is now estimated 32 million gallons per day capacity for the watershed around it. Now, I don't know how we were going to squeeze a treatment facility on there and all that water at any time of the year, but that's what the CSD was planning to do. This grading will be the home of some 7 million gallons a day of dewatering water. The grading that went on, Ms. Taylor touched on it, the dust control was kept down by using potable water. We have a basin in crisis. We are a level severity 3 community. Did we not?
Eric Greening.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Blair, Roar, Granny. Listening to all this, I almost forgot what I came to talk about. I mean, it's really funny. First of all, I am not dirt, okay? Understand that. I hope you would all support the Jack Reedy Park. Anybody who was at the fundraiser Saturday knows that these people can raise the money to do this. A lot of money was raised. This is a good cause. I hope you all support it. There's no problem with funding for this thing. Second, I own property in Oceano. I have every confidence in Tom Giesel that he'll straighten this mess out. Tom got in there because the place was in a mess. Since he's been in there, he's been doing a good job, and he will continue to do a good job. I hate to gloat, but always in the Pomo, the 4th District, we've had a pro-conservative supervisor, pro-growth. Up there in Las Osas, what have you had? People who always said, this is going to cause growth and development, this is going to cause this, this is going to cause this, and you put the sewer project off for years. In the Pomo, we had 4 people in the Pomo Community Service District that had vision in the 70s and built a sewer system and a water system for a fraction of the cost of what you're talking about here today. Because the business of a community service district and the county is to find solutions for people, not to do public agendas for smart growth and social engineering. We did it right in the Pomo. You think we're crazy in the Pomo, but we're in much better shape than Las Osas and some of your other places. Now to get what I really came to talk about. When you did the Willow Road project, you took money from 2 projects in what you thought at first was in the Pomo, but it's really Arroyo Grande. You took money from the Dale Avenue off interchange or passing lane. You fixed the other 2 interchanges or the other 2 roads on Osperos Road. You fixed the one at Pomeroy and fixed the one down further goes Church. Those interchanges had no accidents. Dale Avenue's had at least 40 accidents. You can look up the report. Some of them have been quite spectacular. This 4th of July, a lady had an accident. She was making her legal turn. Somebody hit her. She had to go to the hospital. Her husband's waiting for her to come home. He's in bad shape because he needs her as his caregiver. And here this poor woman had to go to the hospital. Her husband and everything happened because you delayed the funding on this thing. This project should have been funded 2 years ago, and you took the money for Willow Road. Now, that's needs to go back in there so people don't get killed when they're turning off at Dale Avenue. Nobody's been killed yet, but that's no guarantee it's not going to happen. I mean, there's been really spectacular crashes. There are people winding upside down in people's front yards. It needs to be fixed. Thank you very much. And the rest of this is really comedy.
Thank you, Mr. Blair. Eric Greening, followed by Len Schultz.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and certainly threats to our groundwater are getting a lot of needed attention, and certainly the saltwater intrusion issue is huge. I'm mostly here to address a pending threat to our groundwater that is already threatening it in neighboring counties and some opportunities for information about it, and this is hydraulic fracturing. Nationwide, there is more and more anecdotal evidence and more just plain scientific evidence of serious damage to groundwater as well as air pollution issues, disruption of surface ecosystem and traffic issues and so on from the increasing surge of hydraulic fracturing or fracking. So a couple of events at which people can get information. One is tomorrow evening. As you know, the Department of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Regulation has been holding workshops around the state, and the closest to our county will be tomorrow evening in Santa Maria from 7 to 9 p.m. The location of that will be the Board of Supervisors meeting room at 511 East Lakeside Parkway. That's south of downtown between the freeway and the main body of the town, and it should be fairly easy to find, 7 to 9 p.m. The other event is an all-day symposium sponsored not by Dogger, but by the Groundwater Resources Association of California, whose website you can visit to find out more. It's an all-day seminar or symposium called Hydraulic Fracturing and Water Resources, a California Perspective. It will be held on July 24th, and I know you have a meeting of your own that day, but perhaps you can send some eyes and ears down there if you can't be there.
Did I miss Lindy Owen somewhere along the line?
I'm sorry.
I'm Len Schultz of Wasna Valley, and I did want to talk to you a little bit about the oil in San Luis Obispo County. Our county is a successful county, and the Board of Supervisors is playing a key role in guiding the use of resources and encouraging favorable business conditions and favorable living conditions, partly because of the general plan for the county, and that general plan has worked. We hope that more difficult times are over, but our government, business, and individuals still need to be more careful and wise of how we spend our money, use our resources, and make our decisions. Therefore, I urge the Board of Supervisors to look carefully at the following issues concerning the oil production in our county while considering the Acceleron Mencken's permit request due for the agenda in August. You may agree that there is a much bigger issue than drilling 1 to 4 exploratory wells by a small oil company in a somewhat remote Wasna Valley. Take a careful look at some of the things that we do know, such as the problems which have occurred for Santa Barbara County around various oil accidents, Greca Oil Company, and Cat Canyon. Also, we might look carefully at the full history of Price Canyon as far as environmental issues and questionable profitability for the county. Where are all of the leases that Acceleron has obtained? I would say that they're not just the 2 acres on Mencken's Ranch. If the permit were to be granted, would it mean more than 2 acres of a messy, dirty industry in a clean valley and a clean county? Would there be more than just a few trucks going out the back door? Would there be a loss of a community within the county which is productive and enjoyable? Would there be more than just a few barrels of easy oil with no environmental impact, which can make millions for our county and then quietly go away? Is that really true? Would there be more oil coming? Is there already more interest in that area that has the oil in it, which spans not only our county but quite a large area. Where is it appropriate to do the oil work and under what circumstances? Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Richard Margetson and Ms. Owen, I don't have a request to speak on general public comment, so if you want to get that to me, we'll proceed. Mr. Margetson.
Richard Margetson, San Luis Obispo Public Works Department, where 2 + 2 = 5. Stay tuned, though. In the next couple months, you're going to hear about the flaws in the recycled water contract with the school district. You're going to hear additional information on the recycled water and conservation plan that's going before the Water Board on September 6th, and additional information will be going out to the commercial district in Los Osos as to what their realistic future cost will be for the rates and charges. But that's not what I came to public comment today to talk about. The Los Osos Community Advisory Council meets once a month. Mr. Gibson attends those meetings. He hasn't stayed lately for completion of the meetings, and he missed something this last meeting that I will get to. But we've asked that council to look into the recycled water plan. They're going to do it this Thursday. We've asked for 6 months. There's no way they can look at a 116-page document and make comments in 1 3-hour period, but good luck to them. We also asked them to get involved in asking the water board and the county to start the nitrate testing regime. They didn't want to take it up. I think at the request of Mr. Gibson, we had to go elsewhere, and you've received that letter asking the county to start the nitrate testing no later than December 31st of this year. So they haven't done any of those things, but in the last 6 months, they've spent most of their time revising their bylaws and their policies and procedures. And at the last meeting, they didn't take a section out. They added a section to the elections part of the policies and procedures, a section that states now that a candidate for LOCAC, which is an elected position, there's an election every 2 years. You have to fill out an application. The election's held at the little schoolhouse in Los Osos. They added a section to the election section of the policies and procedures that anybody running for office has to have an email address.
The economy for the county is not a big deal, and it doesn't seem to affect decision-making. But I just wanted to say I think that you're kind of out of touch all the way around, even putting new personnel in to replace your county council and your administrator. I didn't see any lowering of the cost of the wages and the benefit packages. Everybody else is taking pay cuts, and we're having people working for $7.25 an hour as firefighters in different parts of the country. I don't see this board being in touch with the economic realities, especially looking at our Los Osos sewer. The Tri-W property, Midtown site for the sewer, has been regraded. It is not a basin. It is not going to hold water. It is, if you walk it, it all goes downhill, and it goes right onto the adjacent private property that has already been impacted by the county dumping and allowing erosion to their stormwater is dumped there, and it erodes into what was a natural basin and is now gone. This project, the grading project, I don't know why there's no cup at the end to make it a basin to collect the water. The other issue that's really concerning is the I'm going to call it the county empty the Los Osos Basin so that they can buy Nacimiento water plan, because it's pretty clear that Mr. Ogren has run this whole project. The spray fields at Tonini, that was a proposal to get rid of the excess water after it was treated. We were going to pay to treat it, first collect it, treat it. Then it was going to be taken into an adjacent basin, sprayed into the air. It cost 2 years of time and $4 million for Mr. Ogren to run that little program through. Obviously, it was ridiculous to throw our basin water away. Now we're looking at losing 1 million gallons a day, 700 of it up on the Broderson site, at the cost of an ancient, there are 40 100-year-old trees up there that are historic trees, and they're going to be removed. The community has no idea. They're beginning to get signage and write letters to complain about this. If we're talking about trying to give us parks, why do you let this leach field is not going to even work now. The saltwater intrusion has moved ahead. This is wasting 700, you know, three quarters of the wastewater that is recycled is going to go into a saltwater plume. And you're going to destroy all these trees and cost us, was going to be $444,000. It's now gone up to $1.6 million for that part of the project. Please.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. That concludes our request to speak on general public comment, so I'll close general public comment. And we're going to take a short break and reconvene at 10:45 for the last two items on this morning's agenda. So we'll be back at 10:45.
You're live.
Okay. You have a new microphone.
I do. Yes. I've seen you.
Are you going? Right, that's what it looks like. She's going to sing to us this morning. Welcome back. The next item on this morning's agenda is the board committee reporting, and I'll ask my colleagues if they have anything they want to bring to our attention that has occurred in the past month since we did this the last time, and I'll start to my left with Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Indeed, there is one of my outside activities that is coming to a decision point. As my colleagues know, I represent this board on a panel called the Independent Peer Review Panel, which is a creation of the California Public Utilities Commission, charged with having some technical oversight or the position of making technical comments on the seismic survey, the seismic surveys that PG&E wants to conduct in the waters offshore Diablo Canyon. Actually, those seismic surveys are part of a larger geophysical investigation of the seismic situation pertaining to seismic risk to the power plant, and they've been going on for quite a while. But starting in 2006, with Senator Blakeslee's efforts to increase our understanding of the geology near the plant, followed in 2008 by the discovery of a new fault that runs along the shoreline at the plant, followed by the tragic events of Fukushima last year, these issues have received increased scrutiny and have gained heightened importance. The particular project underway is an extensive high-energy offshore three-dimensional seismic reflection survey to cover the meeting periodically, starting last year, but more intensively this year, to look at the technical specifications that PG&E is bringing forward. And it's a long and, in fact, technical discussion that I can summarize briefly by saying I think the IPRP has issued comments that PG&E's proposal is basically looking in the right places. If you look at a map of the offshore areas, it will show where the ship is going to go to do the survey. We think that that basically PG&E is covering the proper areas and geologic targets of interest. We've suggested a few small changes, a couple small additions and one subtraction, but we think basically they're looking in the right place. The next level of analysis on this is one that I'm particularly interested in, both as an elected official and in my role as a former geophysicist. I sit representing this county both to represent the people of this county, but also because my first career was in research directly relevant to this particular survey. And I have brought up to the IPRP and to PG&E that I'm requesting that PG&E do a more public presentation on the specifics of how they are conducting the survey within this particular footprint. PG&E has proposed to retain a survey vessel that's owned by the National Science Foundation and operated by Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory of Columbia University. And particularly, they are not using a seismic survey vessel that would, for instance, be out looking for oil in the oil exploration industry. And it has been the case since the time I was in the business back in the mid-70s through today that the seismic survey capabilities of the academic institutions lag those of industry because of the, obviously, the money, the economics of looking for oil has fueled superior technology, frankly. And in looking at the survey as proposed by PG&E, and I should be at pains to point out, Lamont Doherty is a world-renowned geophysical academic research institute. They have made fundamental discoveries. But just in terms of their ability to do seismic surveys, their technology is older than what is current in the industry. And what I've asked PG&E to do, and I remain open in my I don't have conclusions yet, but I do believe PG&E needs to explain publicly why they are proposing this particular survey vessel and how that survey compares to what I consider industry standard. Not only I consider industry standard, simply what is industry standard. To that end, I've written a letter to PG&E. I have copies. Colleagues have copies. The IPRP colleagues have copies. I have a few extra copies if folks are interested here. I'll leave them with the clerk. That outlines what I had done is consulted with current experts in the field of seismic reflection technology to establish what is the industry standard. And I've written a letter to PG&E pointing out what is industry standard and what PG&E's proposal is and asking for a public justification of what they're proposing. The letter is about 4 pages. It has some technical jargon in it. There's an attachment to the letter that's about another 4 pages, which has more technical jargon in it. And we don't want to get into that today. But the basic idea here comes from my role in this committee as a public elected official representing the residents of the county of San Luis Obispo, which is, I believe, the residents of this county, which stand to bear any physical impacts of a mishap at that plant, deserve to know that the best available technology and science is used in assessing this very important issue, the seismic risk surrounding Diablo Canyon. And I believe it's not only appropriate and required that PG&E propose this, or that PG&E justify the way they're doing this, but they need to speak directly to the public to assure us that they have done the best possible job in doing this survey. And that's the gist of the letter. I've not had a direct response from PG&E at this point. I continue to meet with them and other technical colleagues to work on how we can get that response going forward. I continue to meet with the IPRP and to use that collection of experts to speak to these issues. But all of this is working its way through the process as we head toward that hearing on August 14th.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor Gibson. Do you expect to have a response from PG&E by the August 14th meeting?
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. I want to the proposal that they want. PG&E did make a presentation, I believe it was April 19th, if memory serves. The State Lands Commission came to receive comment on the draft EIR, and PG&E made a presentation. As we move between now and the 14th, it may be that we want to schedule some time before this board to have a discussion of that, and it may be that this board wants to take a position as a board on the question of what's being proposed.
Okay, let's pursue that then.
I don't know if the supervisor.
Did you have a question?
I have a question.
Supervisor Machen.
Supervisor Gibson, have you talked with Senator Blakeslee on this? And I'm assuming he's supportive of
yes.
this effort as well.
Yes, he's actually been involved in this much longer than I, going back into 2005, 2006. I have kept in touch with him. I'm sort of carrying the ball on this one as he's off on other issues. But in the brief conversations I've had, he is supportive of the letter that I've put forward. He has actually written a similar letter to PG&E asking for similar sorts of information. And to my knowledge, he has not received a detailed response on that letter either. So we continue to ask the right questions, we think.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. We appreciate your efforts on behalf of the residents of San Luis Obispo County in this matter. Anything else that you had? Okay. Supervisor Hill, did you have any updates for us?
I think I ceded my 3 minutes to Supervisor Gibson.
I think we all may have. But
let me say that I also support Supervisor Gibson's request, his letter. I know he's traveled to Sacramento to meet with officials as well, and I do think it might be appropriate if we ask PG&E to make a presentation before this board, which of course would also allow the public to see it and hear it, if possible. Essentially what it boils down to, I think, as Supervisor Gibson was explaining, is that we want to make sure that the survey is done absolutely with the best possible vessel and the best possible technology. There are going to be, and we're quite well aware of it, and PG&E is quite well aware of it, and the State Lands Commission is quite well aware of it, that there are going to be environmental impacts. So I would want to be certain that the trade-off of those impacts is that we get the most accurate depiction that we possibly can get from this, and that would require us to really demand that the best survey vessel is used. So I'm supportive of that.
Okay, and we'll pursue a possible hearing before the board, see if we can make that work. County Council.
Yes, Warren Jensen, County Council. I just wanted to caution you not to get into a substantive discussion. It's fine to make the reports, but once you start talking about the merits of the reports, it gets into a Brown Act issue.
Okay, thank you. We'll stick to stick to reporting, and I'll ask my colleague Supervisor Meacham if you
no,
have any
I was
updates.
Waiting with bated breath for this report from Mr. Gibson, and now I'm going to have to go home tonight and look at a dictionary to see if
I
can figure it all out.
I don't know if a regular dictionary will actually serve the purpose.
There's a scientific one I can get a hold of.
Mr. Meacham, of course, I don't write this. I did not write this letter to be obtuse, and I am more than happy to walk you through the issues here, or you can consult independent independent experts on that.
Thanks. Supervisor Teixeira, anything to share?
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. I don't, but I concur with colleagues on this report, and I, too, am going to have to go home and try to dig out my dictionary from somewhere in the packing because we moved over break, but I think I'm going to call my oldest daughter, who's the whiz kid on this stuff, and have her decipher it for me so I can figure out what it says. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, and I just have a couple of quick updates in the 1 minute that was left for our board reports, but that's fine. It's an important issue, and I don't like to not allow people time to communicate what needs to be said. Recently, I'm a member of the Carrizo Plain National Monument Advisory Committee. That committee met recently out at the Carrizo Elementary School, hosted by the Bureau of Land Management. And the purpose of the meeting really was to just get an update and status report on the implementation of the monument management plan. And there are several monitoring surveys and restoration projects underway on the monument. Also currently, the Bureau of Land Management is taking comments on what they're calling a travel management plan, and there are literally hundreds of miles of roads on the monument, and they're trying to assess which roads are important and which ones aren't, and they're taking public input on that. If you're interested, you can contact the monument manager, Jonna Hurl, at the Bureau of Land Management in Bakersfield, and her email address is jhurl, H-U-R-L, that's slplanning.org. And that's all I have, and so we'll move on to our hearing item this morning. Madam Clerk, if you would introduce that item, please.
Item number 32, a hearing to consider a resolution confirming amended assessments for the San Luis Obispo Wastewater Assessment District Number 1, Los Osos, San Miguel Assessment District, and Sherwood Drive Utility Assessment District.
Great, thank you. And Ms. Bruneck, you have the staff presentation?
I do, I'm ready.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jenny Bruneck with County Public Works Department. The item is a routine annual process to place these charges on the tax roll. The assessment apportionment item deals with apportioning bond assessments from parcels that are being split or combined into new parcels. Today's hearing is for three purposes. The first is to adopt the resolution confirming and ordering amended assessments. The second is to place the fee for preparing the amended assessments on the 1213 tax roll. And last is to direct the clerk to file the confirmed amended assessments with the county auditor no later than August 10, 2012. The fee for preparing the assessment is $227 for apportionments of 9 or less new parcels, or $30 per each new parcel if there are 10 or more new parcels. The fee is part of the county ordinance fee that was adopted on November 22, 2011. Notice of the assessment, apportionment, and the charges involved were mailed to the affected property owners on June 19, 2012. All the required public notices have been met. And this concludes my report.
Very good. Thank you. Questions from my colleagues for staff? I see none. I'll open it to the public, and I have no request to speak, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for action.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Staff's recommendation. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Jim?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. DeShera?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rather painless. The next item is closed session, so we will be adjourning to closed session. I'll open it to the floor for public comment on closed session, but have no request to speak, so I'll close it to the public and ask Mr. Jensen for an estimate on time.
About 20 minutes.
Very good. Thank you. And we will reconvene this afternoon at 1:30 for presentation. Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome back to our July 10th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. And we'll have a report out of closed session. Ms.
Good
Neal.
Afternoon. Rita Neal, Assistant County Counsel. The board did meet in closed session, and no reportable action was taken.
Very good. Thank you. And this afternoon, we have one item on the agenda, a very important item. And I'll ask Jan Harper to come forward, who she's the current chair of the Commission on the Status of Women. Jan?
Hello and thank you, Board. I am Jen Harper, the current chair of your Commission on the Status of Women, and I am happy to be able to recognize Phyllis Madonna as our 2011 Woman of the Year. Phyllis is a gracious and generous woman. She is an inspiration to all, especially women and girls here. She is an example of how to balance a family focus with her business skills and philanthropic endeavors, a combination all of us can learn by watching her. She has produced the musical review and fashion show raising monies for the women's shelter for 25 years, which bears her name. The annual event brings together groups and celebrities for an energized and enjoyable weekend. Our commissioner, Kathy Veter, was so inspired with Phyllis when she attended the event this year. She nominated her for our Women in the Year, and here we are today. It is my great pleasure, Phyllis, to present this token of our gratitude for all your work. Thank you, Phyllis.
I see you brought the appropriate color as well.
Of course.
Okay. Okay, great.
Yeah, why don't you read that?
I'm going to let her have a moment to open it up.
Okay, very good. more. Phyllis, we have a resolution here from the board that I'm pleased to read. This is a resolution recognizing Phyllis Madonna for receiving the Commission on the Status of Women 2011 Woman of the Year Award. Whereas the San Luis Obispo County Commission on the Status of Women has chosen Phyllis Madonna to receive its 2011 Woman of the Year Award. The Commission is honoring Ms. Madonna for her extensive volunteer and fundraising efforts serving the County of San Luis Obispo. And whereas Ms. Madonna facilitated and sponsored the Phyllis Madonna Musical Review and Fashion Show for the past 25 years, and whereas the Musical Review raises tens of thousands of dollars annually for the San Luis Obispo Women's Shelter and is the main fundraising support for the shelter, and whereas Ms. Madonna supported San Luis Obispo firefighters with the 23 Sea Grave Restoration Project, and whereas Ms. Madonna is a businesswoman associated with Madonna Enterprises, Madonna Properties, and Irish Hills Plaza, and whereas Ms. Madonna is a mentor and inspiration for women and girls of San Luis Obispo County, now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of San Luis Obispo County does hereby recognize Phyllis Madonna for receiving the Commission on the Status of Women 2011 Woman of the Year Award. Well, just come get your award. Well, we'll find a place for it. Well, Clint will figure out what. Yes. And we actually have another presentation that we'll make after this one, or that will be made. So you want to turn around and
get a photo.
Yeah.
Phyllis, it was passed unanimously. Yeah. I just want you to know that.
Thumbs up.
Would you?
Why don't you, Clint and everybody. Why don't you come in the little family shot and have somebody
get all the grandkids.
Sherry and.
Get up, please. Come on, you know this granddaughter's back there. Come on, let's go. Are there more? Yep. Okay, bring them all. Let's get them all in here.
Great.
We're just backdrop. Sherry, you're next.
Everybody good?
You got it.
And you bet. Thank you for being here. And actually, we have one more, Phyllis, if you want to go back.
Go back to the lectern, and we're going to have another one for you.
Vicki Jansen, representing Assemblymember Cacho Asajian's office, is here, and she would like to make a presentation as well. Vicki?
Thank you, Board of Supervisors, for allowing me some time to recognize Mrs. Madonna. Cacho and I both think the world of you, and Cacho asked me to come today. He wasn't able to be here, but we're so proud, and thank you for all that you do for the community, not just the women's shelter, but you do a lot of things for the whole community, and that's very much appreciated. And so on behalf, I want to thank also the Commission on Status of Women for selecting you. I think can't think of a better choice for Woman of the Year. And so on behalf of Assemblyman Cacho Asajian, we want to present you with this Assembly Certificate of Recognition.
Okay. And would you like to say a few words, Phyllis?
I was wondering if I was going to have to say something, but I really do appreciate everything, and I can't tell you how much. I'm not a good speaker. I'm better off behind the scenes, and I adore each and every one of you. You may not know it, but I do. A little too poker-faced.
Thank you, Phyllis.
He's learned to do that, right?
Yeah, and we appreciate the opportunity to participate in the Phyllis Madonna Musical Review every year. We look forward to that, and
it's
a lot of fun.
You.
And it's
thank you.
Have a comment?
I do. Thank you, Chairman Patterson. Having known Mrs. Madonna for longer than I can remember, growing up with the kids at rodeos and all those fun kind of things, I think there was a couple things that were left out in the resolution, and one of them was the fact that not only has she been a mentor to women and girls in the county, but to everybody in the county. All the people of the county would learn a great deal from the things that her and her family have done. And I think the other thing that's very significant is the fact that she's the perfect hostess. Regardless if you're at the inn, you're at the event, you're at the arena roping or whatever you're doing, she's always the perfect hostess and a very nice lady and very special to a lot of us in this county. And I thank you for you and what you've done and what your family's done in this county.
Okay, thank you. And Phyllis, while you're up here, I think it's appropriate. There are several members of the Commission on the Status of Women here, and I would like them to stand up so you can see
a photo?
Who...
photo with them, too?
Well, actually, yeah, that's a great idea.
One more photo?
Yes, let's have a picture of you with the Commission members.
Commission members. Yeah, that would be nice.
I wore the suit just
for you. Yeah, we
did. Well chosen, well chosen.
And the children said, it looks like mom. Should I take my shoes off?
Yeah.
Sit down, Kathy, you're okay. Vicky, you know how to operate that?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, we're doing this for you.
All right, we get them? Okay. Good deal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, I was late. I worked for the Victim Witness Center for 18 years and spent many times helping out with the fashion show. So. Bless you.
Thank you.
We also
have.
You can have the whole afternoon if you like, Phyllis. But I also want to point out that all of our legislative assistants are here as well, and they're sitting there in the third row. So we shut down the county or at least the board, so we could take this opportunity to honor you, Phyllis.
May I thank everyone here, really and truly. It's a humbling experience, and I don't think I ever expected all of this to happen. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to sleep last night.
That's why it was a surprise. We wanted you to get you sleep.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. That concludes our business this afternoon, so meeting's adjourned.